Ivan the Terrible or Ivan the Fearless, depending on how you want to look at him. He was the Tsar of Russia from 1547 to 1584, and he was known as the anti-Jew and refused to even let Jews into Russia. As we learned in part one of the Russian Revolution, we learned that when Polish Jewish merchants tried to enter Russia, Ivan had them arrested. He had their goods seized, and they were arrested and sent back to Poland. And he warned the Polish king to never allow his Polish Jews to come into Russia again. The Jews also cry victim, but when we examine the facts, you'll understand the Polish proverb, "The Jew screams out in pain as he strikes you." So the reasons Ivan gave why the Jews weren't allowed in Russia: the Jews do awful things, make his people abandon Christianity, they bring poisonous potions into the land, and cause lots of trouble to his people. These points are going to go hand in hand and play a key role in our story. When Ivan mentions poisonous potions, he's talking about drugs and alcohol. The Jews dominated the European drug and alcohol trade, even to this day. I know when you think of drug dealers, you don't normally think of Ben Shlomo the Jew. You think of gangsta thugs like the Jewish television shows us. But the reality is, the amount of drugs Jewish bankers distribute in a day is probably more than what all the street gangs in the world combined can distribute in a year. Same thing with alcohol. The Jews destroyed Russia by turning their citizens into drunks, and in Poland they pretty much had a monopoly on all the pubs and inns. When we look at the top pharmaceutical companies, we see that the same financial institutions have their fingers in the same pot. Not only do these financial companies control majority of the drugs, but they also own each other, and they've built a web of corporations, so we can't really know who they really are. So understand this, these pharmaceutical companies are backed by the same financial groups, and all these financial groups own each other, or they're private, and then they throw us shares if we feel like playing Russian roulette with them on the stock market, but they win either way. Remember, the Federal Reserve Bank, which is the American Central Bank, was almost completely founded by Jewish bankers at the hands of Jewish presidential advisors. Now, understand that pharmaceutical drugs kill more people a year than heroin and cocaine combined. And don't think for a second that Jews don't control the cocaine and heroin markets. What do you think the war on drugs is about? Do you think these American soldiers in Afghanistan are guarding opium fields to prevent people from using it? Since NATO, led by US forces, have taken over the opium fields in Afghanistan, and since the war on drugs, both heroin and cocaine use has skyrocketed in the Western world. Not only are these psychopaths importing the drugs, but they also control the legal systems that arrest you and ruin your lives after they catch you using and selling their drugs. In Mexico, more than 20,000 people died due to drug gang rivalries. There have been more than 12,000 deaths in the first 6 months of 2017 alone. These deaths aren't just gangs and drug dealers. A lot of these are civilians being killed. So it's well documented that the Jews have always had a monopoly on the drug trade.
It's good.
Their senior executive with pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline at a pep rally in Las Vegas for their sales team.
There are people in this room who are going to make an ungodly sum of money. Who wants to be a millionaire?
In the past 10 years, the 11 largest drug companies made $711 billion. $711 billion? If we were looking for a bad guy, sounds like we may have found our man.
The pharmaceutical industry remains the most profitable business in the U.S. More success and financial gain for the companies will always remain possible as long as more Americans are encouraged to take drugs.
Pharmaceuticals have always been around, from the apothecary of the Middle Ages to the snake oil salesman of the Wild West.
All he wants is a miracle, folks. How can I deny him? If he's willing to pay for it, he's gonna get it any price.
There have always been sellers of potions and tinctures with the promise of miracle cures and remedies. And most of them were far from helpful. So to protect us from these scam artists and charlatans, we created agencies like the FDA and required pharmaceutical companies to work under strict regulations. But that cut into their ability to make drugs for profit. And that's not American. Those regulations were getting in the way of big business, and pharma needed a hero. Enter everyone's favorite president and big business poster child, Ronald Reagan.
The only way to stop abusing them is to stop using them.
While Nancy Reagan was waging her war on drugs, Ronnie and his administration were lifting a moratorium on advertising to consumers. You know, for freedom. Big Pharma was born. Drug companies were now ready to take on the American public, and Reagan had given them access to the big guns, direct-to-consumer marketing. And in 1997, everyone's favorite saxophone-wielding president, Bill Clinton, and his administration loosened up the regulations even further, making us one of only two countries in the entire world that think that advertising to consumers is a good idea.
I mean, I have to say, this was the advertising and marketing coup of the century. You couldn't do that before.
This is my friend Dr. Gerber. In 1997, he became the first person in the United States to receive a PhD in homeopathy.
I mean, the fact that you can present a problem to an audience as big as a TV audience and say, ask your doctor if such and such is right for you. Wow, I'll ask my doctor. So I go to my doctor. Lo and behold, because the rep from the company was just there with a truckload of samples, he goes, well, gee, let's see. He opens up the drawer, gives the person like a month's worth of samples, just they're free. And then there goes the prescription writing, and then that's it for forever.
So I get it. You give them the first taste for free, and then they're hooked. We tried to talk to a bunch of people from various pharma companies, but they didn't seem to want anything to do with us. So I talked to Gwen Olson. She was a pharma rep for 15 years and wrote the book, Confessions of an RX Drug Pusher.
I knew at some point that was what my job was. I was a drug pusher. I was just doing it legally and with the, you know, being condoned by society. And when people would say, you know, well, you sell drugs, and I would always say, oh, yes, ethical pharmaceuticals, as if.
I've never seen a commercial for OxyContin. I've never seen one for Vicodin. And
they don't need them. The drugs sell themselves.
So why do they advertise the other type of drugs?
Because they have to get the consumer to believe that they need them.
Hey, Pete. Yeah, it's me, Big Brother. Put the remote down and listen.
This intervention brought to you by Niaspan.
So you cut back on the cheeseburgers and stopped using your exercise bike as a coat rack. That's it? You're done? I don't think so.
If there was a panacea that came onto the market tomorrow, do you believe that they'd have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising on primetime TV for the rest of the world to know about it?
It'd be word of mouth.
People would know about it in a heartbeat.
Women who take Lipitor or the other statin drugs for cholesterol have approaching a 50% greater chance of developing diabetes, according to this study.
Well, what about all these statin drugs? Like, They're, you know, saving people's lives. We need statin drugs.
Statin drugs are one of the biggest, I call it a big fat lie, because that's what the cholesterol lie is.
The sickest people I've ever seen in my 32 years of practice were people whose cholesterol was too low. Without enough cholesterol in your system, your immune system can't work properly.
All of the long-term data on the statins show that you will die sooner if your cholesterol is lower, particularly if you're over 55, if you're female or male. There is no benefit to the drugs. I'm not saying that there aren't some individuals who should monitor their cholesterol because of the risk factor, correct? There are other means of lowering cholesterol besides taking the toxic drugs that the statins are. This is a very ingenious marketing plan. What is one of the major side effects of cholesterol-lowering drugs? Do you happen to know? Impotence. Impotence is one of the things that's complained about most frequently for men that are on cholesterol drugs. Well, guess what the same manufacturer's number two selling drug is that makes Lipitor?
Viagra.
Hey! Now we got a patient population that we can sell our next drug to.
Every time I take something, I always feel weird. And then somebody will say, a doctor will say, well, for the weirdness you're feeling by taking something, take something else. And the next thing you know, I'm taking nine things.
Okay, you're going to wind up like Anna Nicole Smith.
Like, there was a point in time when I had my hip surgery, I just got so conditioned to, like, taking a pill that when the next thing came up, like, oh, these painkillers are causing me anxiety, so then I need the Xanax, and then, you know, I can't sleep, so you need the Ambien.
Right.
And you can't focus, so you need the Adderall. And then, like, I had, like, probably 10 prescription bottles, you know, in my cabinet.
That's causing this problem, so take this, and that's causing this problem, so take this. And then before you know it, you do have 10 prescription bottles on your, because of one problem. Why take it if you don't need it, you know?
A lot of people have this misconception that the pharmaceutical industry is altruistic and they're philanthropists and that they're, you know, looking to heal the world. There couldn't be anything further from the truth. The pharmaceutical industry is, their vested interest is in making their stockholders money, because the pharmaceutical industry isn't in the business of health and healing. It's in the business of disease management and symptoms maintenance.
Big Pharma has a economic incentive to classify things so that they can create pills for them, right? Do you know what restless leg syndrome was?
I didn't.
Either did I.
I'm so sorry!
That, you know, they're sitting there because they've drank 6 cups of coffee today and they've got all these refined carbohydrates and sugars running through their body, and they're looking down, they're going, yeah, that's what I've got. Restless leg syndrome. Let me go get a prescription for that. And I mean, there the indoctrination goes right in. 75% of the time, statistics say that if they go in and request a drug, the doctor will give it to them because the doctor considers it his business and they are his customer.
That's the problem with the advertising, the big pharma advertising campaign. What they tell you is, whatever your symptom is, we've got a pill for it. Okay? Mm-hmm. But that's not the way the world works. Okay? You actually have to be a human being and feel your feelings. If your brother dies, okay, you can expect to feel sad.
Feeling your feelings is hard, but lucky for us, Big Pharma has a solution. Psych meds. Finally, we have the perfect pill that promises to take away all of our bad feelings and replace them with sunshine and little happy trees.
With all these scenes of trees and green grass and convertible cars and pillow clouds in the sky, if life is like that when you're on the purple pill, give me some purple pills.
In 2001, the first Zoloft ads hit the airwaves, and we finally discovered that we were suffering from depression. America had a sickness, and depression was its name. Suddenly, the market was flooded with a tsunami of new psych meds. Now, one in every 10 Americans are on antidepressants, including our dogs.
You heard it right, Doggy Prozac, a beef-flavored version of the well-known human antidepressant.
This little guy, this is Radar. He belongs to a friend of mine, Ryan, who goes to my brother's gym. Radar's been feeling a little down lately, so Ryan took him to the doctor.
So I talked to the vet, and she finally, she prescribed him Prozac. It's like a doggy-specific Prozac. It's little 8-milligram tablets that commonly flavored and smell like a treat.
Have you ever taken any prescription drugs?
I was on Zoloft for 3 months about 6 years ago at this point.
And why'd you quit taking it?
I just hated it. It turned me into a zombie.
You don't fear that for your dog?
I mean, I do. Like, this was kind of a lesson.
I was on Prozac for 3 months. I fucking hated it. But I'm going to give it to the same shit to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
There's been a huge change in the nature of what people think of as being illnesses.
Doctor and author David Healy is one of the most outspoken critics of antidepressants, especially SSRIs.
Every disease can be oversold. One of the ones that's being oversold at the moment, even though it's a real illness, is bipolar disorder. It's a rare condition. It's become, in the last 10 or 15 years, 5,000 times more common than it was before. Ever since they were introduced first in the late 1950s, it's been recognized back then that antidepressants don't suit all people. If you're on an antidepressant that doesn't suit you, it can make you suicidal, and it can also make you homicidal. This can happen to you even if you're a healthy volunteer taking these pills. It's not something linked to the illness. It's a thing caused by the pill and the fact that the pill is the wrong pill for you. When drugs worked for tuberculosis vanished. When drugs supposedly work for depression or bipolar disorder these days, the illness doesn't vanish, it gets incredibly more common. Where the right kind of treatment can help save a life and save a career and save a marriage, all too often it's a condition that doesn't need treatment, and where treatment can cause you to lose your life and lose your marriage and lose your career.
That's a $1 billion industry.
Exactly, and they're not going to give it up easily because there's no medical scientific evidence required to diagnose someone to take a psychiatric drug, so it is the most lucrative, cooperative, collusive effort that there is between allopathic healers and psychiatry.
We've been sold the idea that these things work, that if you put your kids on Ritalin, they'll do better at school. If you're at work and you're taking an antidepressant, you'll do better at work. It seems rational to take them. It's not that we're irrational. We're trying to be rational, and we've been sold a bag of goods.
People think that because it's prescribed by a doctor, it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's approved by the FDA, so it's safe. I mean, these are illusory impressions that the public has.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not true.
To get a drug approved, a company only has to submit 2 positive studies to the FDA showing that their drugs work better than a placebo. Not better than another drug already on the market, just better than a fake pill. Then to make things easier on pharma, they get to pick and choose which studies they submit, meaning they could have 48 studies that say a drug is terrible and causes half the people who take it to grow tails.
Well, you did it again.
Gee, what a mess.
But as long as they produce 2 positive studies, the FDA approves the drugs and we get another bottle on our shelves.
Very frequently, companies would come and they'd throw down millions of dollars and say, run it until you get this result.
And what happens to the other 48 bad studies? They get filed away with the Ark of the Covenant in that warehouse from Indiana Jones.
The value in drugs these days depends on companies being able to hide the data and conjure up the idea that these drugs are worth more than they actually are.
The research I do, comparative effectiveness in drugs, has always been left to the pharma companies to do. The federal government doesn't fund that. Now, there are a lot of consulting firms that will come in and do the same kind of research. I call them sort of results are us. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you want to know, and I'll manipulate the data to find it. When it comes to publication, a lot of times, you know, a negative result or a indifferent result isn't published. I guess they call it publication bias. Even the journals, New England Journal of Medicine or JAMA, et cetera, They know, you're basically saying, well, we did a nice big study, and this new drug, everything's wonderful, had no effect.
But isn't that dangerous to people taking it? If they don't know the information?
Under the influence of controlled trials, believing that's the best kind of evidence, doctors stopped listening to patients and looking at patients and going by what they saw right in front of their eyes. They looked away from the patient and looked at the scientific evidence instead. What they thought they were seeing were articles by reputable academics in the best journals in the field. But what they were actually looking at was ghostwritten articles, and that no one had any access to the underlying clinical trials behind these articles. So the companies could say whatever they want.
I started to recognize that I wasn't getting the full picture. The information was being presented to me through rose-colored glasses so that I would present it to physicians through rose-colored glasses. I was being encouraged to misinform people. And if I was misinforming doctors, that meant doctors were misinforming their patients. So there was no informed consent taking place in the medical arena.
And a new report raises serious questions about the safety of prescription drugs in this country. More than ever, medications that are supposed to help people are instead making them sick, and in some cases, even killing them.
Anybody who has a guaranteed insurance reimbursement will be a victim of these things.
3 out of 10 older people are taking at least 5 prescription drugs multiple times a day. Now, I asked our expert why this is happening. Tonight, I'm told they just don't know any better.
I don't care if you're a foster child, if you are an elderly person that has Medicare, if you're an indigent person that has Medicaid.
Older people who take a group of drugs used to treat conditions including asthma, depression, and epilepsy may have an increased risk of dementia and even death.
If you are someone that they can be guaranteed that has a government job that you're going to get reimbursement, you're going to get put on one of these drugs because that means a refill every month and that is a compliant patient, and they're going to get more money in the till down the road. Those are the patients pharma loves. And if they can get your kids, wow, then they've got a lifelong customer.
Mom, I'm on an allergy medicine that won't make me drowsy. Children's Claritin Chewables?
Your child may be taking what is called the most abused drug in America, and you may be completely unaware of how dangerous it can be.
It's true, Adderall has been named as the most abused and overused legal drug.
Adderall has become the new gateway drug for kids. According to the DEA, 6,000 kids a day use prescription drugs to get high for the very first time. And it's killing them, too.
The district attorney's office has opened a child death investigation after a child overdosed on prescription drugs early this morning.
And tomorrow, a summit will be held to talk about the growing problem of babies born to addicted prescription drugs.
Many of those who are affected aren't taking pills to get high, but to get better, following a doctor's orders and accidentally developing an unshakable addiction.
It's the worst epidemic we face in America today.
Addiction?
Prescription drug addiction. Okay? I mean, we have...
Is it bigger than alcohol?
Way bigger. Every 19 minutes, someone dies in this country of an accidental overdose. Every 19 minutes. That means that you take a couple pills before you go to bed, thinking you're going to get your daughter to school in the morning, and you just don't wake up.
The deeper you dig, the worse these guys look.
Recent publications have revealed safety problems with the drug Vioxx.
With billions being made and not much to lose, critics say even in the case of crime, for this industry, nothing is likely to change.
Unless people go to jail, unless the fines are much larger than they have been, the companies will find that it's cheaper to cheat.
In a combination civil and criminal settlement, Pfizer has agreed to pay $2.3 billion, the largest healthcare fraud settlement in the history of the Department of Justice.
But at the same time, the company made, I believe, $8 billion in profit last year. What some industry folks are skeptical about is that this isn't anything more than just the cost of doing business for a lot of these drug companies.
Internal documents show that after this company positively, absolutely knew that they had a medication that was infected with the AIDS virus, they took the product off the market in the U.S. and then they dumped it in France, Europe, Asia, and Latin America.
Hold on, Mike. So, hold on. So you're telling me that Bayer knew that this drug was infected with the AIDS virus. They yanked it from the market in America, and then they dumped it in markets overseas?
They had to figure out a way, Joe, to make a profit on a product that they could not sell in America.
You know, these guys are no joke. They're printing money, they know what they're doing, and they're great at it. And if they can condition a public, an entire culture, to something that's not true, they're saving a lot of money, you know? And it doesn't help anybody. It's killing a lot of people.
My niece was, she was attending Indiana University. She was a pre-med student, and she was in a car accident. And so they started her on mood stabilizers and antipsychotics and antidepressants. And by the time it was over with, she was on 14 different drugs. She had to drop out of school. She wasn't able to work. She cold turkeyed off of her drugs trying to recuperate. And that is an absolute no-no. I mean, you never, ever, ever want to stop taking a psychiatric drug cold turkey because you will go into an absolute tailspin. So out of desperation, she walked into her younger sister's room, took an angel-shaped oil lantern out of that room and poured the oil over herself, and she ignited it, and she burned herself alive. And once I had done my due diligence and my research on it, and I realized that the information had been there that these drugs cause suicidal ideation from the get-go, and that it had been covered up by the pharmaceutical industry and by the FDA, that I got angry. I spoke out when they murdered my niece, and that's what happened to my niece. They murdered your brother, they murdered my niece, because they knew that these things existed, and they knew that there were people that were vulnerable that would be taking them, and they did not inform us. The onus is on them. People ask me all the time, oh, aren't you afraid the pharmaceutical industry is going to kill you? Hell no. I'm afraid they're going to kill you and you and you and everybody I know and everybody I love, and I'm still going to be sitting here screaming at the top of my lungs. That's what I'm afraid of. Mm-hmm. So whatever that anybody can do to add their voice to this choir, it's a moral obligation.
So was Gwen right? Had pharma really killed her niece? Had they killed my brother? This is Greg Kreitzer. He's a journalist who wrote one of the top books on America's relationship to pharmaceuticals called Generation RX.
Seems like we have this like culture of addiction, right? And we have big pharma who's obviously they're making these drugs because there's a demand for them. They're also creating a demand. There's doctors who are pushing the drugs, and you have good doctors and bad doctors. You have good drugs and bad drugs. You have, you know, who is the bad guys and the good guys in all this? Or is there any, or are they just thugs on different levels, you know?
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, I'm always looking for bad guys. And, you know, I did my book about prescription drugs. And some people said, you know, Kreitzer really let them off the hook. You know, he didn't condemn them. And my feeling was, I'm just going to show you what they do. You decide if it's bad or not.
We Americans are pretty quick to string up a bad guy, from the commies of the Cold War to the jihadists in the War on Terror. It feels good to point the finger at someone, and you can't really ask for a more deserving bunch of guys than Big Pharma. But easy bad guys are just lazy writing. Nothing ruins a film like an easy bad guy. What about all the good pharma has done? Modern medicine has beaten diseases that have ravaged mankind and killed millions over the century. Chickenpox, diphtheria, malaria, measles, polio, HIV, all but eradicated by pharmaceuticals, and that's just in the past century. So maybe pharma is not actually the disease, but just another symptom of America's culture of addiction.
I think, you know, one of the big problems is culture, like you're talking about. I mean, I don't necessarily call it an addiction culture. I call it a fix things quickly culture.
Why do you think it's so easy for people just to go for the quick, easy fix?
Well, I mean, going for the quick, easy fix is human. I mean, we want to minimize our expenditure of calories. It's very fundamental. That's always going to be there. The question is, why does the system accommodate it? And I think that's pure free market capitalism.
Takes one to know one, as they say. Maybe the reason pharma is so good at preying on our addictive natures is that they're addicts too. And what's their addiction? Profit.
Drug companies used to think of themselves as medical science companies. They were often led by a scientist or a physician. If you could get 10% profit a year, that'd be great. We could roll out one new drug a year, great. If you look at the records of the congressional hearings in 1983 on prescription drug advertising, there's all these letters, and these letters that go on and on about what an awful idea this is, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they're all from the presidents of the major pharmaceutical companies. So those guys changed, you know. The next generation were not doctors. They were people who were interested in 15%.
I want ads in the Boy Scout magazine and every college paper, full-page ads in color.
It seems like the pharma companies are just, like, addicted to money. I mean, they're like addicts in themselves in a way.
That's not news. That's not news. That's what they do, right? I mean, they're in it to win it. I mean, you go to a barber, you're going to get a haircut. You go to a bar, you're going to get a drink.
I like to think of drug companies as motion picture makers. They've decided, I got this movie, I'm going to show you guys. I'm going to show it to you so often that you're going to internalize it. And at some point, if you get one of these afflictions, you're going to say, I'm going to try that. I think when you create a culture in which the default is the pill and not other things that might make you better, then you end up with addiction. The origin of the word for pharmaceutical is pharmakon, pharmakon. It's Greek. And it has two meanings. One meaning is cure, and the other meaning is poison. It's a very insightful word, because if you think about it, almost all medicine is poison. It's something that's foreign to our body that one part of our body or another is going to have to react to as like an invading, you know, force. Now, sometimes it reacts a good way and we get better. But there's always a price for the poison, is what I like to say.